Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. Jump in Tucson is a unique format show with different hosts covering a wide variety of topics. On Mondays, I host Wonder, talking about the good things happening at the University of Arizona. Tuesday, General Ted Maxwell. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger. And on Thursdays, Tom Moulton talks about attractions. And then I come back on Friday and we talk about great success stories in Tucson in businesses and organizations. In studio with me today, we have my good friend and pal and buddy and compadre, Orale.
Yeah. Directly.
Yeah, Jesse Lugo, welcome. And also with us is Michael Higgs. He's a training manager for McDonald's. We'll get started here quick just to talk quickly about, Jesse, you've got a couple things that we wanted to share with the listeners. First off, let's start with the 22nd Street Bridge and an update there of that project that seems to have been going on since 1912, when Arizona became a state. Well, we started worrying about the 22nd Street Bridge. So,
well, first of all, good morning to everyone. We started this morning early on Christy Simone Wake Up Tucson program,
right?
Because of his listening audience, of course, Ed Ackerley now with the new program. Congratulations, because between both venues, you're giving information to many people in Tucson to understand and know what's going on,
right,
versus trying to read a newspaper. But
yeah.
On Tuesday, I attended the mayor and council meeting during the call to the audience, which you're only allowed 3 minutes to make your presentation. Right. And in the past, mayor and council were pushing for a project to put a new bridge over the 22nd Street Bridge. But it called for a center pedestrian lane with two hawk lanes, which was a public safety issue. But under the oversight and direction of the city manager, Miguel Ortega, we made some major changes. But I'm going to read the letter that I stated at the mayor and council meeting this past Tuesday. I have attached a packet of information in regards to the communications in reference to the future construction of the 22nd Bridge for your review. In the packet is information from the city of Tucson TDOT director with his updated information in regards to the east traffic on Aviation Road that leads into the traffic heading east on 22nd Street that must be included into the final approval plan that impacts the historic neighborhoods of Arroyo Chico, Barrio Centro, Broadmoor Broadway, Julie Keene, Midville, Pueblo Gardens, Santa Rita Park, South Park, all in Ward 5. On Monday, January the 29th, I hand-delivered to each Tucson office with supporting documents for assistance for the additional construction funded being noted of the $25 million for the Aviation Road into the 22nd Street to Representative Raul Grijalva, which is District 7. This is in his district. Mm-hmm. Representative Juan Ciscomani and Senator Mark Kelly. The only person that did call was Juan Ciscomani, but I also mailed the documents to Mayor Ed Hona, President of the Regional Transportation, RTA, with no response yet. I also reached out to the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and the Tucson Metro Chamber so that I could meet with each organization, as no calls to schedule a future meeting have occurred. The current updated information from TDOT has not been discussed with the stakeholders that have been meeting in public with the city manager, Miguel Ortega, and TDOT representatives that calls for the 22nd Street Bridge with three lanes heading east and west, an 8-foot of pedestrian and bicycle paths, exit on 22nd Street into Aviation heading west to downtown, but the closure of the Aviation Road into 22nd Street, that is not what the people support. Another option to consider is two lanes on the 22nd Street Bridge as it is now, just like the Veterans Bridge on Palo Verde and also the Bob Walker Bridge. We the people are asking the mayor and council members to give a unanimous direction to include the Aviation Road into the 22nd Street final construction plan. It has been 20 years, and it is now time to act on the most important transportation project in Tucson, Arizona, that will benefit the public at large.
You know, I went to a couple of those meetings with you, and those first original designs were, I mean, you could have had the third graders at St. Ambrose School do those designs, and they would have, I don't mean to be critical, but they were not very good. That idea of having a pedestrian walkway down the middle of a major traffic thoroughfare like that was trying to solve a problem that wasn't there,
right.
And it was not good. I like your idea, though. I think that the people in that area and all throughout the city would agree that an exit onto 22nd Street heading east off of Aviation is imperative.
Absolutely.
And so your suggestion that maybe just keep the two lanes going east is the best idea to kind of accommodate everybody and make sure that we still have a new bridge, but also have and that would keep the cost down a little bit. They're still not there. They still need $25 million more.
Right.
And so even though Secretary Buttigieg brought us a little bit of money, we still need a lot more money to make this happen.
Well, you know, the one item that the reason why I stated is a option is to do two lanes versus three lanes. Because, again, the Palo Verde overpass and the Bob Walkup is two lanes.
Right.
Just think about it. You have three lanes. It might be that maybe someone may want to pass over the bridge.
Right.
That caused a major accident. So probably three lanes is not also the best,
right,
you know, option to have on
it. And that's what it is over at Veterans. It's two lanes, and it's the same on the Bob Walkup interchange. It's
absolutely.
That's the way they build them. So why not just keep that consistency? That's one of my arguments with traffic in Tucson. Nothing's consistent from one place to the next. So,
but also there was an article in the newspaper that Mayor Romero and Tom Perez,
right,
the senior advisor to the Biden and director of the Office Intergovernmental Affairs, was here in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
I trust that hopefully that the mayor did bring that the attention of his of Mr. Perez, that maybe if the city wants to continue to pursue three lanes,
right,
they can acquire the extra $25 million. But again, you know, I'm not an engineer.
Yeah.
But I would think,
but common sense does play.
Absolutely. Common sense. And, you know, and the reason why this has been delayed, it's now been 20 years because of the pandemic.
Right.
It pretty much ended any public meetings with person to person.
Right.
I don't know about you, but when I want to have a meeting, I want to do just like right now. Because I want to be able to read your body language.
Absolutely.
Right? So I gave you a copy of when I used to lobby at the state capitol, and I put all these bullet points on it. So you look at somebody, you can actually tell whether they're on board. If they start looking up in the sky, you got to grab their attention again and bring them back to the fold in order to be successful as to what you're lobbying for.
All right. We got just a minute or so left here. Tell us about the street rotters. We're going to have a whole session on street rotters a little bit later in the spring, but you have an event coming up on April 20th, and you also got some tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
In fact, tomorrow at the Tucson Street Rotters Association is having a swap meet. If you head south on Houghton Road off of I-10, follow the signs into the circle track there, where we'll have about 140 vendors there, selling whatever items they have. They also have trinkets, you know, for ladies, but also children on it. But please join us. But on April the 20th at Pima Community College downtown Stone and Speedway, we'll have the
49th annual
49th annual car show. We'll have about 400 vehicles.
Yeah.
We'll have food vendors. But on the west side of it is an automotive technology building. On the east side is the welding, and of course, I believe computer science on the same building. Once you are done with the car show, please visit the Pima Community College technology programs, because
pretty awesome, yeah,
absolutely,
especially that auto program is fantastic.
Because if you don't have the means to get a college degree, learn a trade.
There you go.
Trade will put beans and tortillas on the table.
There you go. Well, thank you, Jesse, for stopping by.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We'll get some more on the car show a little closer to the event. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOA 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back in just a moment after listening to some great sponsors. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley, your host. Jesse Lugo is still with us here in studio. We're talking this segment with Michael Higgs, who's a training manager with McDonald's, the Leanne Richards, Pat Richards, and Tashina Freeman organization. And welcome, Michael, again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, well, we were talking that your journey to McDonald's kind of started some time ago. You were based in Sierra Vista. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved and how you made it up here to Tucson.
So, yeah, about 12 years ago, I applied with Leanne. They hired me on. It wasn't but months after I started my journey as a manager, slowly led me to a general manager, supervisor, and now I'm in charge of training and development for all 13 restaurants. I moved up here to Tucson 6 years ago when she purchased her Tucson restaurants, because she's usually based out of more southern Sierra Vista, Nogales,
right,
Douglas. So.
Right. But she has several locations here in Tucson now that she... bought some franchise operations up here. So one of the things I like to tell people about McDonald's is McDonald's is, even though it's a large national corporation and it's worldwide and known throughout the world, the actual people that own the McDonald's in a place like Tucson are actually just local business owners, just like when Jesse owned his service station. He worked for himself, but he had the Chevron flag for his service station. That was kind of fun, wasn't it, Jesse, to have all those years of being with Chevron?
Oh, absolutely.
And when you were a small business owner, you owned it.
Yeah, we had opportunities because, you know, I worked with Gil Huerta. Yeah. And of course, then in 84, I bought the franchise from him. But again, we're under the flag of Chevron Corporation.
And that's what Leanne and Pat and Tashina are. They're under the flag of McDonald's, but they're actually, rightfully so, a small business in Tucson, Arizona, running the operation. So I think that's a fact that people need to hear.
Oh, it's pretty amazing. And you're right. We really do have to emphasize that, yes, we work for McDonald's and we are brand ambassadors, but we are owned by local business owners who live right here with us in the community.
Right. So. And provide quite a few jobs. How many employees do you have now?
We have just over 500 employees.
So 500. Can you imagine doing payroll for 500 people every couple of weeks? Amazing. And that's a task in and of itself, is keeping track of those employees and making sure they all. And as the training manager, I'm sure you have a lot of opportunity there, right?
Oh, huge opportunity! Everybody needs training.
Well, you know, McDonald's in Southern Arizona. There's over 50 locations in Southern Arizona, and every once in a while, a new one will pop up. And there's a five major franchisee owners in the Southern Arizona marketplace, and Leanne and Pat Richards are the folks that. Have the particular store that we're going to be talking about, along with her daughter Tashina Freeman, and Michael is the training manager. That location is over at the corner of 6th Avenue and 29th Street. It's been there for quite some time, right?
It has. It has been here for quite some time now.
But a funky thing happened during the COVID era. What happened when COVID struck? What happened to the Playland?
So when COVID hit, McDonald's shut down all lobbies. And then as they slowly started reopening, they wanted to get away from the Playland and remove them from most of the restaurants. So actually, at this specific location, the lobby hadn't even been open pre-COVID, when COVID right. started. So, yes.
Yeah. So when you have a large restaurant, which the majority of it is, a third of it is taken over by a Playland, and you can't even use the Playland anymore. Corporate decision nationwide was that maybe the Playlands wasn't the most bestest thing for the health and safety of people. And the focus of the restaurant changed a little bit during that time, too. There's a lot more self-service and a lot more delivery and service I use all the time. I go get my coffee. I go park right outside the door, and you bring it to me.
Yes. Since COVID, we have changed a lot of the way we do serve our people, and it is contactless. You don't have to, deal with somebody a lot of the times, and you can sit outside in the parking lot or pre-order and just come inside and pick it up without even talking to anyone.
And I'm amazed at how many of these delivery services come in and pick up stuff and then take it away. And the customer is not even, they're engaging with McDonald's, but somebody else is delivering to them. So that's kind of an interesting, kind of a new twist since COVID.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, DoorDash and Uber Eats have really ramped up since COVID. And actually with McDonald's, we've hooked up with Uber Eats, and you can order delivery straight from the app. It's pretty amazing.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, I'm addicted to the app. I get most of my coffee in the morning on my way into teaching from McDonald's because it's good coffee, and it's a little less expensive than some of the other brands. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on Tuesday. We have a big event happening. It's kind of we got some dignitaries from South Tucson and some business owners and some other folks coming. We have Mariachi Azteca coming in, and this is the re-grand opening, if you will, of the 29th and 6th Avenue store, correct?
Correct. We are reopening it. We are reopening the lobby because it's been shut down to the community. It will be next week on the 12th, Tuesday at 10:30 a.m., so please come join us. Join the festivities. We're building the excitement. We're excited to see you, and if you don't make it on Tuesday, please come on down and see the new remodel of the lobby.
It's for those of you that are familiar, this is a location that is in South Tucson, and South Tucson is a 1 square mile city inside the city of Tucson, which, Jesse, you're very familiar with.
Absolutely.
South Tucson. Mm-hmm. My campaign manager, Sixto Molina, used to be the town manager and the police chief in and I was just there with him last Thursday. We were walking around to the businesses, giving out the invitations to the event. So this actually is in South Tucson, directly in South Tucson, and so it is the only McDonald's in South Tucson.
That is correct, and we're smack right in the middle of it all.
Yeah, so. And it's kind of cool because everybody knows where the McDonald's is. It's kind of in all fairness, some other restaurant chains and other places have shut down in the last couple of, since COVID. There's been some closings of some of these. So when we were in talking with the folks at the city town council, we had three town council members that we engaged with and talking with the city manager and so forth. They're so thankful that you were there providing jobs and providing an opportunity for so many people to come and gather at the McDonald's. So tell us a little bit about what's new at the McDonald's. Of course, the lobby is open. Now, what else do you have?
Well, lobby open. Our remodel inside is a digital focused lobby, no more menu boards. So modern design inside. So that's what we've done inside. Of course, we've maintained our drive-through this entire time, so we've been able to provide jobs and stay open and have employees around the area. And everybody that does work there is in a walking distance. I mean, we provide a lot of the local community with the jobs there.
Right, and it's going to be similar to what if someone's been to a more recently updated McDonald's. You can go in inside and you can actually order off of a kiosk and do your transaction there. It's all taken care of at the kiosk. And then just a couple minutes later, you turn around and there's your food waiting for you.
That's correct. Kiosk through the app. We've changed how we do business inside. We don't have somebody standing behind the counter taking your order. We have somebody out there helping you with the kiosk, helping you get on the mobile app.
More like a concierge kind of an approach,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and so if you're not well-versed in punching up the menu items on the kiosk itself, they help you do that, and they walk you right through it. It's kind of neat to see them do that.
That's correct. And they will show you. We won't leave you there frustrated with it. We will definitely support you in helping you do it or do it for you. So
this is one of many that have been remodeled and reformatted. And we were talking about how McDonald's has, adapted with the times and adapted with comfort food, delivery service of food and so forth. It's just a transition of a large international company that is doing what it can to stay on the forefront of food delivery and hospitality.
Correct. And McDonald's does really well with keeping up with the current times. We don't want to stay back. That's why we're going to this new digital age and using the McDonald's app. About 40% of our customers are using it now.
Right.
And it definitely elevates the experience and makes things a little quicker for them on their end as well.
And I will say from an economic development focus, there's still a lot of jobs that are being, there's still, someone has to prepare the food. It's still, people are still being concierge. People are still delivering food. It's just kind of a readjustment of where they're working, but it's not so much standing at a counter in front.
Exactly. And we get it from people, a little pushback, like you're trying to get rid of the employees. It is nothing like that. We're just trying to satisfy the different areas that people like to be serviced in. So, yeah, you still get that concierge service. You still get that great McDonald's customer service. We just do it with the updated way to purchase and pay for items.
Yeah, I've been obviously a McDonald's fan for a long time, and, in a total of transparency, I do work for the McDonald's Corporation here in Tucson, and it was one of our clients. And the quality of the food is consistent from McDonald's to McDonald's to McDonald's. It doesn't matter where you go. The consistency is pretty amazing that they've got that down to a real art.
They definitely have it down to a science, and it is the same across the board. I mean, as we do training across the whole U.S. together, so nothing's different. It's made the same. Our ingredients are the same. Our procedures are the same. All of it stays and maintains what you've been eating since you were young, and you get that nostalgic feeling.
And even to the personnel, your workers can go to a different store and fill in for at another place, and all of a sudden they're doing, and it's the exact same thing they were doing at the other place because it's standardized wherever you go. So you can actually jump in, no pun intended, but you can jump in just anywhere. Yeah,
that's correct.
Well, that's great, Michael. We look forward to the open house on Tuesday. We should have some quite a few people there with some música, the Mariachi Alegre, and celebrate the opening of the lobby and getting back to the way people might have thought that that McDonald's experience was. Right? So if you're not doing anything on Tuesday at 10:30, stop by at 6th Avenue and 29th Street to the brand new McDonald's. Michael Higgs, thank you for coming in and being part of it. Thank you, Jesse, for being here. You can stick around for the next one if you'd like. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We'll be back in just a little bit. We're going to be talking about with Janet here about Wilson's disease. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 10:30 a.m. The Voice, Tucson's only live local news. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. On Monday, our University of Arizona Wonder Show will feature former University of Arizona basketball player and coach Josh Pastner, who's now with ESPN and CBS Sports. And Peter Hughes, who is the University of Arizona Athletic Director for Adaptive Athletics. So we have a good show planned for Monday. Our next guests today are our good friend, Janet here. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Dr. Ed.
Good to see you again. Janet and I go back about 40-plus years, so it's been a long...
I was a baby.
Me too. I'm only 41 myself. So, and also with us is Dr. Eric Kramer. Good morning, Dr. Kramer.
Good morning, Ed.
I'm a doctor, but I'm not a doctor like you are. You are a pediatrician by trade, correct?
I was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this Jump in Tucson is about, and by the way, Cassidy here, she's sitting over there in the corner, and welcome to her. You know, a Jump in Tucson is about the positive, good things that are going on in the city of Tucson and all the things that good people are doing, not only at the U of A, but also in organizations and activities and businesses throughout the city. After my run for mayor, it was I wanted to celebrate the great things that happened. And one thing we did not too long ago was celebrate the life of a wonderful, wonderful person, Delaney Hare. What a fantastic young lady she is. So tell us a little bit about Delaney and how wonderful a daughter she was.
Wow. Delaney was the light of our lives. She still is.
Still is, yeah.
Yeah, she's just not with us. She was 31 years old when she left this planet. Delaney, in 2020, was diagnosed with a crazy illness that we had no idea and never heard of, called Wilson's disease. And it's a terrible, terrible illness. It's a rare genetic illness that actually lives in your liver. And basically, and Dr. Kramer, jump in anytime, please. Because
I like the way you use that jump in. I like that. That was really good, yeah.
Well, remember, it is multisystemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and basically, your body is allergic to copper. It can't process the copper. And as you may or may not know, copper's in everything. It's in water. It's in your mattress. It's in chocolate. It was in all the seafood that Delaney loved, and it was quite a blow. And the horrible thing about this disease is that it's so rare, and many doctors aren't. We were so fortunate to have a wonderful family friend who was able to help us along the way a little bit in Dr. Kramer.
And it's very difficult to diagnose. And it's one of the difficulties is that it doesn't present until the person has had enough copper to start intoxicating them. And it's a heavy metal poisoning.
Yeah, you said it's similar to what you would get if you had lead poisoning. It accumulates over time, and then all of a sudden it's there.
That's correct.
Yeah, so as a pediatrician, when someone has children, you were telling us that it's the husband and the wife, they have to have the gene that comes together in order to create this situation, right?
That's correct. Both parents have to be carriers. They usually have no clue that they're carriers because it's so rare.
No clue.
No clue. And then unfortunately, one in every four of their children could potentially have the disease. So it's one that you have to have an incredibly high suspicion that somebody may have it. And it usually in kids, when it may present, it presents with very nonspecific, usually abdominal complaints, right, Janet?
Yes.
With people making assumptions that it's many different things, but never the thing that it really is. Oftentimes it mimics hepatitis, but when doctors look to see whether someone has hepatitis, they usually have the virus that causes hepatitis that's present. And in Wilson's disease, they have hepatitis that is the virus is absent. And so one has to be very suspicious from that point on that the person may have Wilson's disease.
So Cassidy is Delaney's older sister. She's here with us, and she doesn't have the gene, and no. So she doesn't have Wilson's disease.
Thank
God. But like you said, one in four of the carriers could actually be afflicted with this disease. So it's not only is it a rare disease, it's rare in a family, and it has to be in that particular setting. So, Janet, talk a little bit about the diagnosis of this when Delaney would go in for early on when Delaney would go in because she wasn't feeling well, and how you finally figured out what it was after all those visits and all those doctors looking at what was going on.
A wonderful nurse practitioner finally in 2020 listened. And, a good doctor listens and did the homework, because the reason we're talking about this is it's Wilson's Awareness Month.
Right.
So I'm just trying to get the word out there so that more doctors will listen, more parents will listen to their child. When she was little, she's just constipated and this, that, and the other thing. The other horrible thing about this illness, when other symptoms became more apparent, it mimics, Dr. Kramer, you said it best. The easy diagnosis is they want to say you're an alcoholic because you're jaundiced. Your skin is bad. In Lainey's case, she was severely anemic on top of all this, and she'd go in and she'd be bruised and jaundiced, and they'd say, they wouldn't believe her. And then they do tests on her liver, and it looks like something it isn't, and it makes it terribly humiliating.
Yeah. Right. When they looked, they saw that she had cirrhosis,
yes.
Right. Which is usually associated with people who drink. And so the assumption was that she was a closet drinker and that nobody knew she was drinking.
She's a kid.
Yeah.
She's a kid.
Well, and at this point, too, it was, right out of college.
Right.
So they look. And by the way, Delaney was absolutely beautiful. She was six feet tall. And
we could have used her last night on the U of A basketball team for that extra 3 points. Yeah.
But she was terribly clumsy, yeah. Which is another symptom of Wilson's disease. Yeah. You bruise very easily. You're very clumsy. There's some funny symptoms with this illness. Yeah. Delaney had catchphrases, and one of them was, let's get this road on the show. And let's get our ducks in a line. Words became interchangeable, and
right.
We just thought it was Delaney.
Yeah.
But turns out all these things were little indicators along the way.
Right. Also,
and this is why it's really important to Dr. Kramer and I, and thank God for you, Dr. Ackerley, for helping us, so
yeah.
that maybe. There's another little girl out there,
right.
who has, stomach ailments, and, the pediatrician is saying, she's constipated, and, maybe somebody will look a little further.
Right.
Really does require a truly invasive procedure, which is one of the problems.
Right.
The person needs to have a liver biopsy done, so they actually have to take a needle and put it into the liver and take a specimen, and then be smart enough to look for copper. So you really have to have a high level of suspicion, and so somebody has to be tuned in, and so that's why it's good that they're having Wilson's Awareness Month.
It was so rare that she would be in the hospital, and the new group of doctors would come in and pass through, and they'd want to do all sorts of whole block of tests on her, and you kind of had to stop them and say, let me school you here on what we think is going on.
It was an exercise in frustration constantly, and Delaney preferred many times, and Cassidy will attest to, kicked me out of the room because I'd become frustrated with the doctors. They'd want to do another 24-hour urine test for the copper. They'd want to, and I'd say time and time again, this was diagnosed.
Right.
Can we not accept the diagnosis?
Right.
Really, I have to think there was one doctor in the Banner system, Dr. Tiffany. She's a palliative care doctor. And, you know, when she walks in the room, you know, Delaney and I and Cassidy, you know, that was a hard one.
Right.
Because it was only a few days later when Delaney was no longer with us. But let me tell you, she listened.
Yeah.
And she cared. And she understood Wilson's. It's just, we just need to get the word out there that, you know, there's things that may look like a duck and sound like a duck, but they're not.
Let's get our ducks in a line, right?
Yeah.
Actually, let's get on. Well, we'll come back in just a minute and talk some more about the great life of Delaney Hare and talk a little bit more about Wilson's disease and see how people can recognize the symptoms if they see somebody in their own life that might be afflicted with this very rare disease. We're speaking with Dr. Eric Kramer and Janet Hare. We'll be back in just a minute, and we'll wrap up Jump in Tucson. To Jump in Tucson, this is Dr. Ed Ackerley, and we're speaking this morning with Dr. Eric Kramer, a childhood pediatric doctor, a good friend of the Hare family. Janet and Cassidy are here. Janet Hare is a longtime friend and client. You have a day job. We work together with you over at the Doubletree Hotel. But Janet had
at
Reed Park. Correct. Janet had a lovely 31-year-old daughter by the name of Delaney, who succumbed not too long ago to the very rare disease called Wilson's disease, which is a affliction that is caused by too much copper in the system, and the body cannot process that copper. So we were talking, one of the interesting things was diet and how important diet is to the process, and what foods contain a lot of copper. And if you obviously have Wilson's disease, you probably should stay away from copper. So what are some of those foods that someone should be concerned about eating when they're diagnosed with Wilson's disease?
Oysters and other seafoods, crustaceans, whole grains, nuts, potatoes.
Chocolate.
Beans, chocolate, right? Yeah. So a number of the foods.
So all the things that I like is what
all
you're
saying. All the things you like.
The list is the things that I like.
I mean, it's a game trying to figure out, you know, what to eat. Yeah. The other thing that Dr. Kramer reminded me, Delaney had beautiful, beautiful brown eyes. And there was something very special about her eyes ever since she was little. And she had a beautiful, almost copper ring.
It was a copper ring.
Yeah, well, and it was a copper ring. And you know what? Tell them, Dr. Kramer, that right there was staring us right in the face. And and what are those rings called?
They're Kaiser Fleischer rings. And I'm sure that every doctor who she came in contact with couldn't wait to examine her because they're so rare and everyone's supposed to recognize them when you do an eye exam. So they all wanted to see it, so they all got a chance to see it, which drove you crazy.
Drove me crazy.
Right? Because it's an educational tool. Yeah. Which is one of the difficulties, as she became a specimen, right? She became somebody with a rare disease that everybody had to see, and that's incredibly frustrating.
But they wouldn't accept that she had it at the same
that's
time.
Crazy.
It was right there, and they're looking at it, and they're like pulling her out as a show pony, but then saying, you know, you know, we're not sure.
Yeah.
And boy, it was staring us right there in the face.
Right. So that's one of the symptoms is that obviously liver, but the eyes as well.
Eyes
manifest itself.
And also central nervous system, which is what Janet described before, where she had difficulties with speech, difficulties with balance, difficulties with memory, all your brain, and is one of the main organs that's involved eventually, your nervous system.
But I also have to pop in that Delaney was such a tremendous person throughout this whole process of 3 years that she was diagnosed. She wouldn't miss a beat at her job.
Right.
And, you know, she had a passion. She was in the hospitality business. And, you know, she would, skip a blood appointment for a blood transfusion because they needed her at work.
Right.
And her colleagues and her coworkers. So, you know, it's also a very livable disease until it's not.
Right. And that's one of the things that we want to make sure is clear is that there are some things that you can do to mitigate this once you find out that you are a carrier of that particular disease. There are some things you obviously, one is to adjust your diet. That's one.
Adjusting your diet is very important, but also there you treat it as you would have a metal poisoning, mm-hmm. where you actually have specific therapeutics that remove the copper.
Right.
Zinc.
And right.
Zinc is one. There's a penicillamine. There's a number of drugs that they use, the same drugs that they would use for lead intoxication or arsenic intoxication that remove heavy metal.
So for those people that are listening, you know, the Mayo Clinic has some information on Wilson's disease. You told me that the University of Michigan Health Sciences Department.
Yale
has done some good work on Wilson's disease. And Janet Hare is an expert in Wilson's disease.
She has become
an active person to let people know that this is a disease that is, you know, it's so rare that what you were saying that maybe only about 9,000 people a year are afflicted with
this? I think 9,000 people total.
Total. So it's very, very rare, extremely rare from a percentile perspective. And that's part of the reason, Janet, you know, that these medical teams probably didn't know exactly how to treat it or what they...
You know, exactly. And it just feels like a mission for me now to put a name with the face, put a voice to it, and make people aware, because when you're aware of something, it's not as frightening.
Right, right. And knowledge is the best
power.
Medicine.
Power.
That's a good power. So if you're a parent and you have a little kid that's and they can't
complaining about their stomach, and you take them several times and they say the baby's constipated, well, maybe think twice, look in their eyes. For starters.
Well, great. Well, we'll long remember forever our good friend Delaney Harris. She was an awesome person. And you are too. Thank you, Janet, for being here.
Thank you, Dr. Kramer.
Pleasure to have you come in here today. We appreciate you coming in and sharing the news about Wilson's disease and what people can do to mitigate that and spread the word about the kind of rarity that it is, but also the kind of things you can do to mitigate those things. So we are wrapping up here. I just want to let you know that coming up on Monday, we have some Josh Pastner from U of A basketball will be with us, as well as Peter Hughes from U of A Adaptic Athletics. And if you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson, give us a call. Go to jumpintucson.com. You can look and see what we have available, and maybe you'd like to come and tell somebody something about something you know about, like Jesse told us this morning about the hot rod. That's April 20th, right? That's coming up on April 20th at the Pima College West downtown campus, right?
That's correct.
Right, and then and you've got something cool coming up. We're going to be talking about the restaurant opening at the Doubletree Hotel at Reed Park.
Absolutely.
Am I allowed to say the name? Javelina. Javelina. The Javelina is coming back to Tucson. So that's going to be fantastic, as those of you that have been around here. So, well, thank you so much for being here today. We will, coming up on Tuesday, we have Ted Maxwell. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger will be here. And on Thursday, Tom Moulton. I'll be back next Friday, as well as Monday, but I'll be back on Friday with more stories of success and things that you should look out for. Again, if you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you. And it's not about what you know, it's about who knows you. So maybe you should be live on the air. This is Tucson's only live local news talk station, KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. Thanks for listening to Jump in Tucson, and we will be back with you in a little bit on Monday. Talk about the University of Arizona.